What's going on, guys? Welcome into another edition of Take It to the Bank. As always, I have my co-host Vasily Larikos with me, and we've got a ton to talk about, including my switch of a prediction. It worked because I was right. I said the Ravens were going to win, so not to pat myself on the back here and brag too much, but I will say this. It feels good to be right when you were wrong.
Check the scoreboard. Check. But let's get into it now. I mean, what?
This is all in fun. Mr. Larikos is a great friend of mine. I respect my elders. I love it. I just have to brag to him because he was a little bit hard on me last week, talking a little bit, or 2 weeks ago, excuse me, because last week I was right. But he was talking a little bit about me, so I just had to fire back. But we're all friends here. It's a great show. And I want to start with this offense because it's an interesting scheme to look at because they only put up 21 points, but this was a really good defense. This was just an overall dominant win. And as always, we're going to start with Joe Flacco. What did you kind of see from Flacco?
To me, the big key on offense was the third down efficiency. Flacco started out hot, and I think that was really the key. The defense had a masterful performance, but really the cause of that was that the offense put them in a position where they could just pin their ears back and hunt Mariota. And I just want to focus on the third down efficiency because to me that was really the key of the game. The Ravens converted 8 of their 9 third downs in the first half, and most of them were not gimmies. Buck Allen picked up 11 on a 3rd and 10, then 6 yards after a dump off on 3rd and 5. Then Crabtree had their opening touchdown on 3rd and 4. The next drive, Willie Snead converted a 3rd and 9. John Brown gained 23 on a 3rd and 6. And then later in the second quarter, Flacco hit Crabtree down the right sideline for 20 yards on 3rd and 10. And rookie tight end Mark Andrews moved the chains with a 7-yard gain on 3rd and 6. And even further in the third quarter, Snead gained 24 yards on a 3rd and 18, helping to set up the third touchdown. I don't know if that efficiency and that level of efficiency is likely to be repeated, but I think you have to tip your hat to Flacco and the receivers. Joe delivered catchable passes, and the receivers reeled them in clutch moments.
Yeah, you hit right on it. I mean, Joe Flacco was money on third down, but my biggest takeaway from Flacco is that this was not a great performance by any stretch. I thought he was inaccurate on a lot of throws. He missed a couple of receivers that were open down the field. But I can't nitpick because he was still accurate and leading the offense. He was still good enough to get the win. And this is the biggest thing is the offense stayed on the field. And I can't talk about enough with that third down efficiency because this is all the defense needs. All they need is the offense to put up, 17 to 24 points a game, stay on the field, dominate the time of possession, and run that clock down. That's all they needed to do, and they did it perfectly. They scored 3 touchdowns, and the thing that I want to take away, and this was the biggest takeaway for me, is that, and this is a general offense, is that this Titans defense was very, very good. They were the best in the league in terms of red zone efficiency. They only allowed 3 touchdowns on 13 opportunities heading into Sunday. On Sunday, the Ravens were in the red zone 3 times. They scored on all 3 trips. That's efficiency. Getting back on track after they started 13 for 13 in the red zone, went 1 for 8. Now they're back on track. I liked what I saw from this group in the red zone. And the other thing, the Lamar Jackson package, Jackson only had 2 snaps. But the outside zone concept that they ran where they took him outside, that was a thing of beauty. That was exactly what I called for in my film piece when I was comparing the Saints' use of Taysom Hill to Baltimore's use of Jackson, and that's exactly what the Saints ran. That was a play I think they just stole from the Saints. I mean, it's nothing new, but it was a great play, and it worked well, and Jackson almost scored.
Yeah, 22-yard gain on that play, the biggest play he's been a part of this year, if I'm not mistaken, and also have to give some credit to Ronnie Stanley's blocking on that play. I thought Stanley had an outstanding game. He really silenced the Titans' pass rushers on that left side, and he also did pretty well in run blocking, but the same cannot be said for the rest of the offensive line. I thought they certainly had their struggles, as we've seen all season. What are your takeaways from the offensive line's performance?
I agree with your assessment. I thought Stanley had another one of his good games because both of us have been very critical of Stanley. I mean, when you're a 6th overall pick, you're expected, in my view, to be top 5, maybe even top 10 at worst in your position. And I could argue that Stanley's closer to top 11, top 12, but I thought he did really good, and I thought that James Hurst also did pretty solid. I was pretty impressed with him, but the interior, even Marshall Yanda, and I was going to ask you, is this a concern that he's kind of been inconsistent so far? I haven't been too impressed with Yanda. I know he's made a couple of decent blocks, but he struggled for, is it the shoulder? Is the ankle acting up again? Because he has not been his usual self. I thought Matt Skura struggled a lot as well. I mean, he just continues to get bullied time and time again. He had a couple of untimely penalties as well. And then Alex Lewis before, and we're going to talk about his injury, but before he went out with exited the game with an injury, he struggled a lot as well. And that's the whole thing is, I mean, Alex Lewis was coming off, I would say, his best game against the Browns, but this is just a questionable part of this team, and I think it could essentially hold them back if they continue to struggle.
Absolutely. It's been the potential Achilles heel of the team since the preseason. Really, we've identified that, and they have to get better. I'm not necessarily concerned about Yanda. He was out in front of most of the Ravens' good runs that they had, which were really few and far between in this game. But I think he's stuck in a tough spot between Hurst. I mean, he has to give Hurst a lot of help, and I'm not. I thought Hurst had a mixed game. I don't think it was one of his better games. And then also, you know, trying to help out and compensate for Skura's deficiencies, it puts Marshall in a tough spot. I'm not worried about him. We'll see what happens here. Apparently, Alex Lewis is cleared to practice, or at least has rejoined the team after that scary neck or back injury. So we'll see if they reshuffle the line in time for week 7 or not.
Yeah, so the Alex Lewis update is that John Harbaugh went in his press conference and he said that they think that it's nothing serious. They're still waiting for some more tests, and he said it's possible that he could return this week. And my question to you, and this is probably a dumb question to ask you because I think you feel the same way I feel, is if Lewis misses any amount of time, what do you do with the offensive line? And I'm going to quickly give you a couple of the options, and then I'll let you kind of pick your poison. I am going to play devil's advocate when you give me the answer that I know you're going to tell me. So option number one, obviously, I think it's the simplest option. I don't know if it's the best option, but it's simple, where you put Hieronymus Grasu, or you can put Bradley Bozeman just in at left guard. That way you're not changing any position other than left guard. You're switching out Lewis for one of those two guys. Or an option that I'm not too high on is you take Matt Skura, you put him at left guard, then you put Grasu or Bozeman at center. Both of those guys, I think, are more natural fits for the center position and could carry it out a little bit better. Or the option that you're going to pick, and that I'm going to pick as well, is you put Orlando Brown Jr. at right tackle, then you put Hurst at left guard. And before I say anything, I just want to, before I let you go, I just want to say one thing, because I know you're going to pick the last one. Doesn't make sense, though, because if they shift Hurst to left guard, I know he looked good last year at left guard, but now you're jeopardizing two positions on the offensive line, whereas in the other options, if you just put Grasu or Bozeman at left guard, you're only sacrificing one.
Well, you correctly identified, I choose option C. It's time for Orlando Brown to get some playing time after looking very stout in the preseason. I get that argument. I understand why shake up two or even three positions on the group at this stage of the season with a 4-2 record. But the counter argument to that is that the offensive line has not been playing well and they could use some shaking up. They really could. You know, this game, even with the game script as it was and the game flow as it was, the Ravens still really, really struggled to produce much yardage on the ground, and they're going to play some better offenses in the upcoming games, most likely this upcoming Sunday against New Orleans, and they have quite a few other high-octane, high-powered offenses on the schedule in November and December. They're going to need that run game to help control time of possession. So I'm not scared to shake up two positions. I think that's the best place. Hurst gives you that blocking, and he can also do some of that pulling and help out the run game and solidify the interior. And I think Brown is ready for showtime.
Yeah, I agree with you. I am in no way, shape, or form disagreeing with you. I'm just presenting the counter argument that I know is going to come. But I think I would put Brown Jr. at right tackle. Just see what he's got, because Hurst has been okay. I don't think he's been exceptional, and I don't think he's been horrendous. I just think that he's shown you that he can play left guard at a serviceable level, certainly better than Alex Lewis has shown you, so I'm not sure what the risk would be, but there is a risk when you're in a new season. Last year is not guaranteed that you're going to get that kind of performance, and he also played a right guard last year as opposed to left guard, so you can't really sit here and project. I mean, it is a little bit different. I know some people might not think it is, but it is a little bit different, so it's something worth considering. But let's get to that rushing attack.
Yeah, just too many negative plays. The Ravens did have a few good runs. Collins punched in two touchdowns. Obviously, the Lamar Jackson run. There were a few mixed in there. But Collins, on 19 attempts, so this is not has nothing to do with not feeding him the ball or getting him enough touches, produced 3 yards a carry. And that figure includes three or four, you know, longer runs. So he was getting stuffed for one and two and negative yardage way too often. And I think Gus Edwards, the undrafted rookie free agent who was promoted to take DeLance Turner's spot, just a big, powerful guy. He was arguably the best running back we had on Sunday, 42 yards on 10 carries. Does Edwards deserve a greater opportunity moving forward in your mind?
I wouldn't say so. I'm a Buck Allen guy. I'm the leader of this bus. I'm the leader of this train. I think Buck Allen needs more touches. I mean, listen, the Ravens run a complex running system. They run a lot of different concepts and a lot of different schemes. Alex Collins, to me, only fits in this gap scheme. He only fits when he's got to make one read. He can't do the multi-read system of a zone concept, and I think Buck Allen can. I would give Buck Allen more carries, and I would let Gus Edwards take more of a responsibility in the goal line and short yardage situation. So, yeah, I guess so, yeah. But, like, to me, Alex Collins has shown me who he really is this year. I know everyone wants to talk about what he did last year. And, listen, he was dynamic last year, and he's flashed a little bit this year. I know he had two touchdowns. But the thing is, I'm still worried about the fumbles. I don't know. I can't get that out of my mind. And I think that some of the runs that are negative plays, I don't think they're all on him. I don't think they're all on the offensive line. I think some of it is on him and his failure to read some of the lanes.
Well, the thing with Buck Allen, and I think he's definitely an underappreciated player. He has a great nose for the first down marker and the end zone for that matter, but he doesn't usually gain very much beyond what is blocked for him. And with this offensive line, there hasn't been a whole lot blocked for him, to be honest. So I guess a follow-up question, would you consider trading for a veteran with the trade deadlines coming up in about 2 weeks? There's a couple veteran name guys out there, maybe a LeSean Shady McCoy or a Marshawn Lynch or someone like that.
I wouldn't go with McCoy, and I don't think they would just because of the legal trouble that he may or may not be in. I know it's a pending case, and I don't really want to get into it because I just don't know all the facts, and we still don't know what's going to happen with that. But I don't think they're going to touch McCoy because of that. You don't know what's going to happen. And Marshawn Lynch, from what I just read, is suffering from a groin injury. But, I mean, if he's able to come back, you might want to think about it. But I would stick with what they have because I think that what they have could be a nice three-headed monster with Edwards, Collins, and Buck. But I also think that it's the offensive line's got to play better because I can't completely blame the running backs. Like I said, there are some mistakes. There were some yards out there to be gained, but I also think the offensive line isn't performing to their best ability and they're not doing everything they can to have a successful running game. But the scheme, I think, itself needs some issues as well. As I'll point out in my film piece, the scheme itself is certainly questionable. I would say so myself.
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't agree with trading for somebody at this point either with a 30-some-year-old running back with barely any tread left on his tires. Just throwing it out there as a topic of conversation. Just moving forward, I think Dean Pease, you know, his reluctance to really do anything too deceptive or too aggressive, I think really benefited the Ravens in this game. And he also just didn't want to use a whole lot of man coverage, which allowed the Ravens to find some gaps between that zone, and they took advantage. And I think until they get this running game solved, it's going to continue to have to be a pass-first offense, and hopefully you get a nice lead early and let the defense hunt and let the running game kill the clock.
I was kind of hoping that this would be a tighter game and then Joe Flacco would lead them down for a game-winning drive so we can see that prevent defense just one more time. That's what I was hoping for, to be honest with you, because that prevent defense is awful. But let's move on to the defensive side of the ball. Credit Don Wink Martindale, because we talked a lot this offseason, pretty much to a disgusting level, about all the players talking about all the freedom you have and we're unleashed now and all this other stuff. And it was hard to not take it as a shot towards Dean Pease. You kind of told me in a previous show, hey, you might be reading too much into it. And I agree with that to an extent. But, I mean, you look at some of these delayed blitzes, some of the kind of audibles they made that I think they made. I mean, this defense has a lot of freedom and they're really executing well. There was the blitz where Eric Weddle initially was going to go up. Marcus Mariota recognized him, made his audible, said to watch out for him, he's blitzing. And then he went back to the deep third, and then Tony Jefferson came in and generated some pressure. So I think this defense looks really, really good. But I'll throw a caveat in there. I also thought Marcus Mariota missed some plays. There was that one play where he completely missed Taywan Taylor. I mean, Eric Weddle blew the coverage, and it was in the deep throw. I think it was a cover one. Eric Weddle blew it, and Marcus Mariota just overshot Taylor.
Right. Weddle jumped the underneath route, and that's maybe what concerns me about giving the defensive players maybe a little bit too much freedom. I hope that doesn't come by to bite them, when they're playing upper echelon quarterbacks, but definitely don't want to go down a negative road after this fantastic performance for the second consecutive weeks. The Ravens front absolutely dominated the opposition. And personally, I don't think it's a coincidence that they have been punishing quarterbacks ever since Willie Henry returned from injury. They've had 60% of their season total sack numbers have come in the last two games. And Henry did not collect any of the team's 11 sacks in this game. He did have one in the previous game, but his ability to knife into the backfield has given the linebackers a lot of cleanup sack opportunities. I thought the delayed inside linebacker blitzes also worked beautifully. Jack Conklin could not block Terrell Suggs, and Za'Darius Smith has now recorded 5.5 sacks and countless interior pressures this season. I'm wondering if he's rising up the list of impending free agents that the Ravens should go all out and re-sign, perhaps more valuable than even C.J. Mosley.
I would sign Smith over Mosley if that's your question. If I just have to pick one, I'm signing Smith all day just because of positional value and things like that. However, I don't think it's going to happen. I think Smith's going to get overpaid somewhere else because, let's be honest, sacks get you paid. Sacks, we saw it with how long do we have to name all these outside linebackers that produced maybe one season, a little bit more, Pernell McPhee, Paul Kruger. I mean, we can go on and on about all these guys that got paid because they had a good season or two or sometimes even three in Baltimore and then they got paid elsewhere. So I don't know how much stock I'm going to put into that notion of, well, you got to pay him no matter what. Because I think that, especially with the Ravens cap situation, as we both have talked about a lot on this show as well, I think Smith is going to price himself out of the market, like you said.
Well, if it's apples for apples, say, I believe McPhee got $8 million a year. Mosley, I think, is looking for $12 million a year. Let's just say, hypothetically, Mosley and Smith are both looking for $12 million a year. You pick Smith in that scenario?
I would pick neither, but if I had to pick one, I'd pick Smith, yeah.
So what's been maybe worth about $10 million a year, you think?
I would go less than that. I would say anywhere from nine-ish. 8 to 9-ish. But you also have to consider, like, let's look at the Ravens cap situation. I mean, I don't think they have room to spend that kind of money. Do you?
Well, they have room to get a couple marquee guys, probably two big ticket guys. I mean, the cap just goes up by so much. Let's not go down this rabbit hole. We have plenty of off-season time to fill, and this should definitely be your primary podcast for salary cap discussions, because we both enjoy that very much. But let's get back to the game quickly. Pass coverage, I thought, also played a big role in the record second sack numbers. Some of the takedowns were directly covered sacks. And then all four of the main cornerbacks, Brandon Carr, Marlon Humphrey, Tavon Young, Jimmy Smith, played between 73 and 61% of snaps, the snap shares. I thought they all played pretty well. And then Tony Jefferson, another stack in another game on top of another good game on top of another good game. He has definitely thrived in Martindale's scheme, probably more than any other player on this roster.
I certainly agree with you. And the thing that I'll take it to one step further, and this is a question I have for you. So Marlon Humphrey did not start. They went with Brandon Carr and Jimmy Smith. Are you happy with that? Because I think, like, Marlon Humphrey has struggled a little bit this season, but he's had some good games as well. It's kind of been up and down for him. But I wouldn't touch it. I think Brandon Carr is quietly having probably a much better year than last year.
Carr's playing well. I thought Carr played well last year, too. I think he might have led the cornerbacks, at least interceptions, if I remember correctly, last year. I don't have a problem with rotating. I guess you keep the guys a little bit fresher. And then depending on the matchup, the individual matchup, maybe Carr's a little bit more physical and Humphrey's a little bit quicker. So maybe you rotate in and out from that standpoint.
I think when you're playing a team full of, like, bigger receivers, like I hate to go college football here, but if you're playing a team that has receivers like Stanford, I think you put Brandon Carr out there. But if you're playing more of like a speedier, kind of quicker team, I think then you'd put Humphrey out there. So I agree with that notion. I want to ask you real quick about Kenny Young, a Peanut started. So Kenny Young, I mean, I know he had a sack. He looked pretty good, but Peanut, man, oh my, what happened?
I'm still a Kenny Young fan over Peanut. He shoots the gaps extremely well in run defense, and he picked up a nice sack where it looked like he was spying Mariota, and then once he realized he wasn't running, he got to him and brought him down for a sack. I think he brings that level of athleticism. He may not always make the right decisions, but I think that athleticism really solidifies and brings the speed that the middle of the defense needs.
And my final question for you, and this is kind of about the inactives defensively, Pat Ricard, inactive. Tyus Bowser, inactive. This might be a trend moving forward, and my question is Tyus Bowser on his way to kind of joining that dubious list of second-round busts?
I don't know. I mean, it's certainly possible at this point. He hasn't shown very much at all. I think a lot of it is just a numbers game. I mean, the Ravens are just so stacked on the interior. Michael Pierce came back, had an awesome game stuffing the run, which made Pat Ricard obsolete in a way, especially with Max Williams doing a lot of that dirty work blocking on the offensive side. And then Bowser, I mean, he's behind Suggs and Judon and Tim Williams and Za'Darius Smith, and there's just not a lot of snaps to go around. You know, it's a good insurance policy to have. I still think Bowser has a lot of potential, but he does need to start getting a little bit more game experience to realize that potential.
Well, that's the thing, is you think at this point, like, he might not even get that many snaps, and he actually, if you think about it, in 2 years when he's in his contract year, he might ball out because he'll get more snaps than go somewhere else. But we're going to go down this rabbit hole, and we're not going to do it. As you can tell, we're passionate. We love football. We love talking the Ravens. And my final question before we give our official takeaways, because we have official takeaways here. My final question is, okay, so the Ravens in week 5, they stunk. They went on the road. They lost to the Cleveland Browns 12-9. They come back and they defeated and completely dominated a little bit of an overrated Titans team. But they look at it, they went 2-1 on a road trip. Now they're 2-2 on the road in the year. So do you think that their road struggles should be a concern? Because, I mean, listen, they looked in both of their road losses, they've looked absolutely horrendous. And then in both of their road wins, they've looked incredible. So are we going to see pretty much what we saw last year where they go 4-4 on the road?
Most likely. I mean, who knows? The road games down the stretch are not easy games either. Most of them are against, you know, like I said, teams that can put a lot of points on the board. But really, it's a struggle for every team in the NFL, except for maybe the Rams. Every single team in the NFL, whether it's the Patriots or the Steelers or the Chiefs or the Saints, who we're going to see, you know, every team plays different when they're at home versus when they're on the road. So I guess the key is, you take care of business at home in the regular season, try to squeeze out a couple extra road wins, and then you have home field in the playoffs if you get that far.
Well, that's the concern for I would think, Ravens fans, is that you look at, okay, let's just say, hypothetically speaking, they don't win the AFC North. I'm not saying they're not going to. I'm just saying, let's say, hypothetically, they don't. They go on the road in the wild card round. That's not a gimme considering their struggles on the road. But if you get a home playoff game, if you win the AFC North, you get a home playoff game, whether you're a 1 seed, 2 seed, 3 seed, 4 seed, you get at least one home playoff game. I would almost say that this team probably won't lose at home in the playoffs, especially depending on who they play. So then that guarantees you a little bit of extra insurance to go a little bit farther. So to me, I think it's really important that they go almost, what I would say, undefeated at home. You have to win your games at home. It's very important to win your games at home. Let's go to our final takeaways. What do you got?
Well, that segues perfectly because the Ravens are going to have an opportunity to prove what they are with 4 of their next 5 at home. They've already played all 3 of their divisional road games, none of the 3 divisional home games. And in this game against Tennessee, they really proved that they can beat a tough defense on the road, even while losing their turnover battle. Now, up next, we have a test against the Saints, with which we will delve into, do our deep dive in our preview show later this week. But that is a diverse offense that this defense may not be able to smother. And we're going to see if the Ravens offense can win a potential shootout. But at a minimum, the Ravens have proven they are a legitimate playoff contender in my mind. Super Bowl contender, I'm not so sure yet. And here's an interesting number. Flacco has not led a fourth quarter comeback since 2016, which has been quite a while. I know, I guess when they start fast, they win. And when they don't, maybe they don't. But and the defense, I don't think they're quite generating enough takeaways to really be considered truly elite. So hopefully we're going to see some more consistency out of the offense during this homestand.
So that's kind of my counterpoint for you defensively. That, I think, is what makes their performance that much more impressive, is they're doing this without even generating a lot of takeaways. Like, I mean, they're getting some takeaways, but they're doing it without generating that many takeaways. So to me, that's what makes it more impressive, is they're just flat out stopping people. They're just forcing punts. Yes, you want more takeaways. Set your offense up for more success. I get that, and I'm not in a disagreement at all, but I'm just saying I think that's what makes it a lot – that I think that's what makes it so much more important. Offensively, I'm still – listen – I've been getting called out for being called a Joe Flacco hater, and that I'm not a Joe Flacco hater. All I'm saying is I'm a little bit concerned because on the road, he's not looked that great. I mean, they've had what, four road or what they've had four road games now. And the reality is he hasn't really looked great in all of them. I mean, against Pittsburgh, he looked really, really good. I'll give him credit for that. Against the Browns, he looked very bad. I thought against the Bengals, he looked even worse. And then you look at the Titans game, I thought he looked inconsistent, but he looked good enough to win. So if he can at some level just elevate his play even close to what he does at home on the road, I think this Ravens team really could be playoff contenders. But at first, I need to see Joe Flacco make some noise.
Fair enough. Around the NFL week six, I know I have a feeling you're going to start with Sunday Night Football.
Let's start with Sunday Night Football. Okay, so I just want to say this again, and I hate to say you were wrong, but the Patriots have a way of taking the NFL's best team, the team that everyone's talking about, and they just have a way of just defeating them. And I know they barely won, and that was 43-40. I get you. I hear you. But this Patriots team, honestly, everyone wants to talk about how bad their defense is. Their defense didn't look as bad as the 40 points Mahomes put up suggested. It also, they were a little bit shaky in terms of run defense, but I liked what the secondary did to an extent. I know they let up 352 passing yards and four touchdowns, but they did force two interceptions, I thought, and they didn't get any sacks, which is an issue. And I think New England does have a pass rusher problem, but I don't know if this defense can get going. I think the Patriots could be scary because this offense, I know Brady only had one touchdown, 340 yards, but Sony Michel had two touchdowns. Brady had a rushing touchdown as well. So this is an offense that I think can stick it with anybody. And they showed that because the Chiefs arguably were the best offense and the highest scoring offense, one of them in football, and they stuck right with them. So to me, the Patriots are continuing to be one of the elite teams in the NFL.
Well, we both predicted a Patriots victory, and we both predicted a shootout type of game, and we both predicted Belichick was going to force Mahomes to become a little bit uncomfortable, which was exactly what happened. So, the Patriots at home with the extra rest, you got to take them every single time. We'll see how they go going forward. The other big AFC game of the week was the AFC North, Steelers-Bengals. Pittsburgh won with the late score in a thrilling back-and-forth game. Their offensive line blocked remarkably well. And Cincinnati's injury-depleted secondary could not keep Antonio Brown out of the end zone with 15 seconds left. It does seem that the Ravens have the Steelers' number, the Steelers have the Bengals' number, and the Bengals have the Ravens' number. So now all three teams are within a half game of each other in the standings.
Yeah, it's going to be quite the finish because I really, and I think you said it best, everyone's got everyone's number kind of the way you said it, but I think that here's my takeaway. The Steelers are 3-2-1. I know they lost to the Ravens right now. They're 1-1-1 in the division, but this is a team, and if they get Le'Veon Bell back, whenever he comes back, I'm sure Brian Davis will come on for our preview episode when the Ravens in Week 9, and he'll probably tell us, man, if Le'Veon Bell joins this offense, this is going to be a tough team to stop. I know the Ravens defense did very well against Pittsburgh in that previous matchup, but that offense was still struggling at times. As Antonio Brown says, that his Wi-Fi connection with Big Ben was a little bit spotty. I think that it's getting a lot better, as we saw, and the Steelers just find ways to win football games. I don't know what it is about them in New England, but it just seems like they don't care about the first half, and then they get it going in that second half. And especially, and that goes for the season as well. It seems like the Steelers always start out a little bit slow, and now they're getting pretty hot. So big win for them. The Bengals, in terms of the Bengals, do you think they're falling back to earth? Because they've looked really good. They look like one of the best teams in the league, to be honest with you, through the first 5 weeks. And then I know this is a little bit of a heartbreaking win. They almost had it. You can argue they should have won. There was a couple of controversial calls down the stretch that might have shifted the game towards Pittsburgh. But I still think that the Bengals have some holes, and I think that the Ravens honestly might get their number when they come to Baltimore, because I think a lot of the Bengals' holes really are the Ravens' strength, specifically D-line versus offensive line.
Sure, but the same goes vice versa, too, in that game. I think that game could probably decide the division. I'm still not sold on Pittsburgh's defense. I think if Cincinnati had their full complement of secondary players, they would have held on there. I don't know why they'd send a blitz with all their corners and safeties banged up at that point. But another team that's looking like a playoff squad is the Los Angeles Chargers. They blew out Cleveland on the road with bombs downfield to Tyrell Williams, 3 Melvin Gordon touchdowns, 5 sacks, and a 2 interception day from slot corner Desmond King. I think that the Chargers may be in position to give Kansas City a run for the top spot out west.
I agree. The Chargers looked really, really good. I thought the Browns just looked absolutely awful. I thought Baker Mayfield, everything that he showed us up to this point, he just looked like a different quarterback, to be honest with you. The offensive line struggled, specifically Desmond Harrison. Questionable decision from the beginning from both of us why they chose to start him at left tackle instead of maybe throwing Corbett at guard and Betonio at left tackle. Maybe there was something we didn't see in training camp, preseason, etc. But I just thought that the Browns, specifically the left side, and I'll give you credit, this is kind of what you were talking about before the season, is that offensive line, especially left tackle, is certainly shaky. The Browns wide receivers continue to struggle. They struggle to catch the ball. They struggle to create separation. They brought in Breshad Perriman earlier in the week, and I think Perriman's expected to play this week. We'll see if he can help that receiving core. But
that's never a good sign.
Easy. I think that the Browns defense also, I was surprised that the Chargers had so much success, because this is a defense that we were arguing were one of the best in the league, and Phillip Rivers picked them apart. But Phillip Rivers, give him credit, he is en route to, I would say, one of his best seasons statistically.
Yeah, I don't disagree. He's definitely in the MVP conversation. Another team that was looking like a contender, but maybe not so much after this week, was the Jacksonville Jaguars. They got absolutely rocked in Dallas. 6 out of 10 Jacksonville drives were of 3 plays or less. And I think you picked Dallas in this one, and I give you credit for that. Their defense has come a long way in a short period of time. But I think more concerning is Jacksonville's vaunted defense was carved up by Dak Prescott, and I think the Jags are really starting to fade.
Your former boy, Mr. Jalen Ramsey, was, for the first time in his life, I might say, speechless at a press conference. He was speechless because he didn't even know what happened. Dak Prescott looked good. Ezekiel Elliott looked good. Michael Gallup had a nice catch for 27 yards. Could have almost had another one. Couldn't get his feet in bounds. He was walking on air. It was all over Twitter. But no, I think that the Cowboys, like I said, they were my prediction to win the NFC East before the season started. I still like the Cowboys. This defense, especially Byron Jones, is playing really, really well. And I think that they have the defense now to really compete. Now the question is, can their offense win in spite of their horrible offensive coordinator, Scott Linehan, who I guess is figuring it out. But he's been horrible through 5 weeks and starting to figure it out. But I mean, back to the Jaguars. I want to talk about this. That defense, I haven't seen. I don't remember the last time a team put up that many points against them, and just looked like it was seamless. It was hard to watch. It was interesting to watch because I've never seen anything like it. And the biggest issue with the Jaguars, and this is why I think that Joe Flacco, if the Ravens want to part ways with him, I think Jacksonville is a possible destination, because that's still a team even next year that will be in a win now mode, and they need a quarterback because Blake Bortles just is not cutting it.
No way. Blake is this is some of the worst ball he's played his entire career. Another team we'll touch on briefly, because there's a lot of teams still in the mix in the AFC. Only 4 out of the 12 teams have more than 3 losses right now. But the Miami Dolphins surprisingly beat the Chicago Bears, and they were really bailed out by Albert Wilson, who caught 2 short Brock Osweiler passes and took them 43 and 75 yards each for touchdowns. to force overtime. Miami is also now 4-2 on the season, even without their starting quarterback Ryan Tannehill.
Brocktober. It's Brocktober. there's nothing else to say. It's Brocktober. But no, listen, like, the Dolphins are going to do what they always do. They're not going to go far. Don't let them scare you. The collapse is coming. They got lucky, like you said, that Aubrey Wilson made a couple of plays. They probably didn't deserve to win this game. They shouldn't have won the game. And quite frankly, I think the Bears were a little bit overrated. I still don't have faith in Mitch Trubisky. I think their defense is incredible, but I also think that their offense leaves a lot to be desired for me. I don't know if Matt Nagy is as great of an offensive mind as everyone is making him out to be, and it's certainly a question. And there's only one undefeated team remaining. That's the Los Angeles Rams, and the Rams, to me, are the best team in football, and it's not even close.
No question. The Rams are the best team in football, but I thought this loss was really on the Bears' defense. I mean, they put up 28 points on the road. That should be enough to win. That defense did not look as good as it has, and apparently Khalil Mack is undergoing some testing for a possible ankle injury, so not a good sign for them.
Okay, let's go to college football. Before we break down some of the games, there is a couple of news that happened this week. So Nick Bosa suffered that injury earlier in the year, and now everyone was saying he's going to come back, and now on Tuesday it was revealed that Bosa is withdrawing from the football program, and he is entering the 2019 NFL draft, and he will prepare and recover and rehab in hopes of being ready for the combine. And I have no problem with this move. I don't see what the advantage he would gain. I think, to me, he's pretty much everyone's consensus top three on everyone's board, and I don't think there's any reason for him to go out there and risk re-injury or risk putting out subpar tape because he's not 100%.
I agree. I always side with the student athletes because they're not getting paid, and they have no reason to continue putting it out there for the team without getting the benefits. He already has the tape out there that he needs to become a top three or maybe even number one overall. I think he's probably consensus number one overall right now. But to the larger point, I think this does harm Ohio State's title shot. They did not look great in their game against Minnesota this week. They struggled to put the Gophers away. And I'm not sure if they're going to even be able to win the conference. But if they do, I think they're probably going to be one and done in the playoff.
Oh, I don't disagree with that at all. I think Ohio State's done because of this. Nick Bosa takes that defense to an entirely different level. The other injury news, and I am not happy to say this, but my wide receiver one, DK Metcalf, has been ruled out for the remainder of the season with a neck injury. And remember, Metcalf is not a senior, so he can come back next year, and he just might. And this could change my draft board, at least, drastically.
It's an unfortunate break for Metcalf. He was definitely looking like maybe a top 10 overall player, a dramatic rise, and you were on him very early in the process. So let's hope he gets well soon. And it's still a good crop of receivers, but maybe a couple more second and third round type prospects as opposed to early first-round prospects.
Absolutely, and Metcalf, it's just an unfortunate injury, and it sucks when some of these players get hurt, especially guys like him who were about to enter the draft, I think, and make a large chunk of change, and now he's got to come back, and he might come back. I mean, I don't know yet. I mean, there are conflicting reports. Some are saying that he's going to come back. Some are saying he's not. Justin Herbert, I just want to touch on that real quick as well. There's more and more reports saying that Herbert is highly considering returning to Oregon for another season, and to me, this is the one that I don't understand because he is consensus QB1. He's not my QB1, but I'm in the minority in saying that he's not. So if Herbert doesn't come out, I mean, that changes the draft board's draft drastically as well. But I don't agree with that decision at all because he's already going to be a top 5, top 10 pick without a doubt. So to me, just come out, make your money. There's no reason to go back to college. It's the same thing with Sam Darnold. Like, I thought Sam Darnold could have benefited from one more year of school, one more year playing at USC, but I think he realized, hey, I have a good shot to be number one overall pick. If not, like he was, he'll be in the top five, and he ended up getting selected third overall. And now he's doing pretty well in New York. I know he's got some rookie struggles, but to me, I don't understand if you're a quarterback and you're already projected to be a top five pick, why would you even consider going back to school?
I agree. Strike while the iron's hot. As they say, timing is everything. But it was a wild, wacky weekend of college football action that just passed. We're at the midway point, and 8 ranked teams all lost in one weekend. And I think Herbert, if he does come out, and perhaps I heard rumor that one of the reasons he's considering staying is that his younger brother is apparently getting ready to enroll next season. I believe he may be a tight end, but that wouldn't change the equation for me personally. But I think he has cemented himself as the draft's top eligible quarterback after knocking off Washington, who had one of the best secondaries with the most pro prospects, right up there with Alabama and some of those kind of teams. But he really beat them with some really nice big-time throws. And conversely, Missouri's Drew Lock trending in the opposite direction. I watched most of that game, and I thought he struggled greatly with accuracy against the Crimson Tide.
Yeah, Drew Lock is still my QB1, and I think that if Herbert doesn't come out, he's obviously going to be QB1. But I think that Lock showed you that he needed help. You know, his offensive line struggled a lot against this Crimson Tide defense. Let's face it, Alabama's got how many pro prospects on their team? Missouri has how many pro prospects on their team, you know? I mean, at some point, you have to realize that Drew Lock is a little undermanned, and at this point, just doesn't have the talent around him. But he did make a couple big throws, but he also made a lot of mistakes, a lot of turnovers that I thought were avoidable turnovers. But yeah, I mean, this was definitely a asterisk for me. I'm really concerned about this for Drew Lock in terms of his pro projection, but and Herbert looked good. I think that it's a little closer to even now, but again, I'm still rolling with Lock for right now, but he's still got a lot to prove. LSU, they defeated Georgia. This was kind of a little bit of an upset. Didn't know if this was actually going to happen. It was one of my predicted upsets, but I didn't expect it to happen in this kind of fashion. I mean, LSU completely dominated them, 36-16, and it was all behind the running. I mean, 275 total rushing yards.
Yeah, and I think the key was Jake Fromm, Georgia's quarterback, was absolutely terrible. He had one of the worst games I've seen from a quarterback that's considered a pro prospect in a long time, and I'm really hoping he's going to be replaced by supremely talented true freshman Justin Fields, hopefully in the next game. I think Fields' talent is right up there with Trevor Lawrence, and he has number one overall potential indeed. The other takeaway I had from that big marquee SEC showdown, both the cornerbacks, LSU's Greedy Williams and Georgia's DeAndre Baker, they were both locked down in coverage. We've given Greedy plenty of praise on our show here, and I think Baker is right up there with him, probably a top 10 or at worst a top 15 type of prospect.
The other quarterback that everyone's kind of talking about, Will Grier, also kind of trending down, had a horrible performance against Iowa State on the road. West Virginia, some people were considering them to be college football playoff in that conversation, but they really aren't at this point. I mean, after a brutal loss to Iowa State, they were the number 6 ranked team in the country. Now they're going to fall a little bit, but Will Grier finished with 11 for 15, 100 total rushing or passing yards, a touchdown and an interception, and negative 33 rushing yards. You know how that goes. But also another takeaway, David Sills, one of the wide receivers trending up on the draft boards, really struggled to create separation this game. Only had 2 catches for 22 yards, but he had a touchdown. But I thought that he still struggled immensely to create separation against some of these bigger, more athletic Iowa State corners. But then on the other side, Hakeem Butler, a guy that's rising up my board as well. Big target, 6 receptions, 107 yards, and a touchdown.
Greer is really too loose with the ball the last couple weeks. His draft stock is plummeting. Another quarterback, though, whose draft stock may be rising is Michigan's Shea Patterson. He's a junior transfer who is starting to develop pretty well under the tutelage of Jim Harbaugh. We know Harbaugh can develop quarterbacks. He developed Andrew Luck for the most part. But the Michigan Wolverines, they posted an impressive win over Wisconsin by outgaining the Badgers 320 to 183 on the ground. And their tailback Higdon is also starting to rise up draft boards after a couple strong weeks in a row.
And another week, another time, I will talk about Memphis's Darrell Henderson. Absolute monster. I don't know. His production is going to be insane when you look at it for this season. He totaled 199 rushing yards and a touchdown. He had a nice 43-yard run as well against UCF as Memphis lost by 1 point. But, I mean, Henderson can do it all. He's got great vision. His ability to shed tackles is incredible. I mean, this is a guy who I think really is going to be undervalued in the draft process, and whoever gets him is going to be a steal for sure.
He's a nice player. I gotta watch more tape of him for sure.
Yeah, and then the last game I wanted to kind of touch up on, though, and you kind of talked about a couple guys. The Notre Dame Fighting Irish survive against Pittsburgh. Oh, my. They almost lost. It was 19-14, and the Irish didn't look that good, but they keep their perfect season alive, and this is a team that I think can certainly make the college football playoff.
Yeah, I think they're definitely in line to make the playoff. I'd actually put their chances a little bit above Ohio State, considering the remaining games on the schedule. And Pittsburgh, for whatever reason, they always seem to have one game where they just come out of nowhere and either pull off a massive upset or give a top team a tough game. So, you know, I think Brian Kelly's group are going to rebound pretty well. And we'll get into previewing all of the games on an upcoming exciting Week 8 college football slate.
Absolutely. So this is our official recap episode. Stay tuned. Like I said, we got a couple of announcements to make in a little bit. And with that, we're out.